All right, 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday morning on WPHM. COVID-19 pandemic has ripped a big hole right down the middle of the state budget. It looks like a plan has been agreed upon to patch that hole up a little bit. It does include some cuts, some federal spending as well. Joining us right now, the chair of the House Appropriations Committee and our local state representative, Shane Hernandez. Shane, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Well, this has been a tough year for the state budget, but it looks like an agreement's been reached. What are some of the highlights?
Yeah, I mean, this is the agreement for the current year budget, so this is kind of step two of three steps I've been talking about. One was the supplemental we passed using some of the federal dollars, patching up the hole in the current year budget is what we did last night, and the next step will be next year's budget. But we were facing about a $3.2 billion budget hole, and last night we were able to come to an agreement that balanced that budget. It was done through a variety of methods. There were some pretty significant reductions in there, but we also had the $1.9 billion of Federal CARES Act dollars remaining that we were able to use to offset some of those reductions in quite a few areas. So we came to that agreement last night. It was through two votes particularly that were both unanimous votes. And then there's a couple other pieces to it. The governor's executive order, which was also a reduction that was agreed upon. I think it's important to point out that in an executive order on the budget, it doesn't just take effect without a vote. The House and Senate Appropriations Committees did vote to approve that. And then there's a lapse of some work project funds that is done through a letter. And if the Appropriations Committees are to disagree with that letter, they do have the ability to reject it. But because this is part of an agreement, our intention is to accept the letter and let those funds lapse to help us balance the budget.
I know your phone started buzzing yesterday. There was a rather misleading headline that started to circulate around social media saying Whitmer defunds Michigan State Police. And in fact, she didn't defund the police. The agreement that we're talking about this morning included eliminating funding, but then putting it back in with federal funds, right?
Sure. And what really happened was a fund shift. There's about $500 million between state police and corrections that is not being funded with state general funds this time around. They're being funded with federal CARES Act dollars. And what people saw was that first step in the process, which was the governor's executive reduction. And all they saw was the reduction side of that. And actually, on that piece, if you remember when the governor's budget framework was put out about probably 3 weeks ago, that framework talked about the $500 million of CARES Act money that was being replaced in those areas. That was done just by an agreement between the legislature and the governor. And it's one of the areas we can use those CARES Act dollars as a true one-to-one replacement because corrections officers and state police are considered frontline workers and they are eligible for CARES Act dollars.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about next year's budget because that's the real tricky one. You don't necessarily have that CARES Act money to work with for next year, and yet there's still going to be a pretty huge deficit you're going to be dealing with. How do you approach next year's budget now?
Yeah, we're facing a $3.4 billion budget deficit next year. We did keep a little bit of CARES Act dollars, not a ton, but we're able to use those through the first quarter of our next budget year because we can use them up to December. So that will be an area we look at. We do still have some rainy day fund, but we're going to have to get to work and look at some of these furloughs and layoffs that have happened in state departments are likely to have to continue. We're going to have to look at work project funds again. So far, we only took about a quarter of those work project funds, so three quarters of them remain. And we'll have to continue to look at restricted funds as well, which last night we did move some restricted funds, but there's quite a few still left. It's going to be a difficult process, but my opinion of it is we have to move forward with the resources we have. We can't sit here and do a negotiation based on what we think Congress might do. We have to get to the table and work forward with what we have. And also, I just do not support any increase of taxes of any kind in this process. This is a situation that is, in my opinion, it's temporary, and I will not accept a long-term tax increase for a temporary situation. We have to get through this with the resources the state has in front of us and make those difficult decisions.
What is your level of optimism of being able to work through this budget negotiation for next year without too much back and forth? I mean, do you think that because resources are limited, might it actually be easier to come to an agreement?
I mean, it won't be an easy process just because getting to $3.5 billion of reductions, no matter what the relationship isn't an easy thing to do. But I think that in these last two steps, that supplemental and this this current year reduction, we've showed that we are able to work together on this. When it comes to the budget, we don't have a choice. We have to balance the state budget. We have to balance that by September 30th. And, last night we came together, we had an agreement that the two bills that the legislature voted on as part of this were both unanimous support. And I think the Senate maybe had one no vote, maybe. I don't remember what their vote total was, but pretty overwhelming support that we were able to come together on this agreement, and we have to continue to work forward that way on next year's budget.
We're talking with Shane Hernandez, chair of the House Appropriations Committee, our state representative from Port Huron in the 83rd District, not seeking re-election this year because he's seeking election to Congress, Paul Mitchell's 10th district seat, where Mitchell is not seeking re-election. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the campaign for Congress. How difficult has it been, by the way, to run a campaign, to campaign for Congress, A, in the middle of a pandemic, and secondly, you've been so busy with this work on the budget. I mean, it's how do you find time to run for Congress, and how do you run for Congress when we've got coronavirus?
Yeah, this is not the election year I had in mind when I made the decision to run. It's been difficult. Doing my job as appropriations chair is the job I was elected to do. And it is what I do first and foremost. I won't take away from that to run, and I've been focused on this, as we were able to show last night when we got an agreement done. It's kind of interesting, though, because I think the COVID situation has actually helped me manage that somewhat, because there haven't been a ton of events. There hasn't been reason to travel all over the place and go to things because it's been closed down. So it's actually helped me somewhat be able to manage the budget situation we're dealing with running for Congress, because I haven't been pulled away as much as you would be during a normal campaign.
Yeah, interesting point. Your opponent in this race, by the way, Lisa McLean, is portraying you as a liberal, and I have to laugh every time that I hear that commercial. Has she looked at your record?
If I'm a liberal, I don't know what the other members of our caucus are. Almost every vote that I'm being attacked on was voted on by all Republicans. To claim I wrote Gretchen Whitmer's budget, there's a ton of different directions you can go with that. Obviously, you guys know my disagreements with the budgets that the governor has presented, but at the same time, it is my job to write a budget that we eventually agree on. You've seen the differences between what I've come forward with. You know my voting record. I believe in 2017 I was the most conservative member of the House. I've got a consistent conservative record. So we just continue to move forward. There's 12 days left. We'll continue on our message as a proven, trusted member that you know who I'm going to be when I get to Washington, D.C., because I have that record. It's not just talking points for me. It is a proven record as a conservative, and I'll continue to do that in Washington, D.C.
We don't know what Washington, D.C. is going to look like next year in terms of who will be in the White House, who will have the majority in the House or the Senate. So given that, and the fact that we'll still be dealing with the economic fallout of coronavirus, what do you see as your priorities in Washington, if you're elected?
Yeah, the answer to that question has changed. If you asked me that question 4 months ago and you asked me that question today, it's a completely different answer. I believe we'll be continuing to deal with the results of COVID-19 for quite some time. We have been so focused on attracting new businesses in Michigan across the thumb for quite some time, and that focus is going to have to shift to retaining our businesses. We have people out there that are struggling. We need to make sure that our small businesses have the resources and that government isn't in their way, that they're working alongside of them to keep them here. But there's other things that we've talked about in the past that are becoming more important than ever, whether it's access to rural broadband. I can't tell you how important that's going to be as we go forward with not quite knowing how this next school year is going to look. That is going to be crucial as we move forward. And so I believe, the focus for the several years is going to be making sure we get back on our feet, making sure our small businesses have the resources to get back on their feet and thrive.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be a long-term proposition, and that's going to mean all hands on deck. I guess, Shane, people around here know you as you've served in the state legislature. When they are filling out their absentee ballot or however they are voting in the August primary, and they're choosing a Republican to run for the 10th Congressional District, why should they select Shane Hernandez?
Well, again, this is probably the most Republican congressional district in the state of Michigan. And when you listen to the talking points of all the candidates, they're all going to say the same thing. We're going to say we're pro-life, we're pro-Second Amendment, we're against taxes, we support the president. There's only one candidate in the race that can prove to you that those aren't just talking points, and that's what they truly believe. I've been there for the last 4 years, working, and I was working on the president's election 4 years ago at this time. I have voting records on all of those issues, and they're very good voting records that I stand by. I don't have to defend that record. I think people around this area have followed that and know what my record is, and we're running on that message again of proven, trusted, and tested conservative, the only one in the race.
Shane Hernandez, thanks for your time this morning. Appreciate it as always. Have a great day. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.